This is Dr. Allie Evans welcoming you to Light on Health, a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect your health and that of our entire community here in Astoria. My guest today is Kestrel Gates, and we are going to be talking about planning for postpartum time and about postpartum wellness. Kestrel, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I've been wanting to have you on the show for a really long time, so I'm glad you're here.
Oh, thank you so much, Allie. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us, well, just to let everyone know, the hats you wear in our community, first and foremost, you're a mom.
Mm-hmm.
You are an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And a gardener,
yes.
A homeschooling mom, and an author. Now
yep.
An author.
Mm-hmm.
Kestrel just finished a book on postpartum wellness entitled Build Your Nest, a Postpartum Planning Workbook. So we'll be talking about that. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in especially the postpartum time for a woman.
So long before I had my kids, I was interested in birth, and I got a doula training and really had that kind of focus. And then once I had my first baby, I realized that it's really the postpartum time that's so neglected in our culture. And I had a really hard time recovering, and I felt like I was just supposed to jump back into work. We work from home. And back into our social life, back into everything, and I really paid for it physically. And so when I became pregnant with my daughter, my second child, I started researching, and I was looking at postpartum traditions from around the world, and I found this really interesting article written by a woman who was born and raised in Korea and came to the United States as a nurse, and she wrote it about her own postpartum experience, and then she wrote it for other nurses to read to gain an understanding of postpartum traditions from around the world. And from that one article, I realized that there's a lot of commonality with postpartum traditions and practices from around the world, and that women are celebrated, they're taken care of, they get to have a set time for rest, and their family and their communities really come around and help them. And she was really shocked when that didn't happen here in the States.
Mm.
And so I started doing more research, and I called my mother-in-law, who is originally from Vietnam, and she had all her children during the war in Vietnam. And she immediately had all kinds of suggestions for things I should do. And I really got the strong message from her that taking the time to rest and be supported and take care of my physical and emotional health was really important. And she's one of the hardest working people I know. So to hear that from her work ethic, it was really amazing. That had a really big impact on me. So when I was pregnant with my Lynn, I planned for having help afterwards. I planned for having support and rest. And then I realized that it's really that planning process is really important, that maybe I could create something that could help other families, other mothers plan.
And what you're saying is so interesting, because it's kind of going from being passive to being active. Like, it's a very empowering active step where you're a creator in your life, instead of, I think, women often feeling like no matter what their birth was like, whether it was exactly as planned, which I'm going to say that almost never happens in my experience, it was wildly against what was planned. I think in any of those cases, it's, you know, during this time, it's a time that is so hard for women to sit back and, you know, sometimes we get in this feeling of, gosh, this was out of our control and things are being done to us, or this just happened. And I think that kind of, I don't want to say victim role, because it's not meant to sound judgmental, but that role of being passive in it. And you're kind of flipping it over and saying, no, you can actually be a very active creator in this.
And it's much easier to be an active player with planning beforehand.
Absolutely.
And part of that is asking for, you know, figuring out which of your friends is going to come over and help with your older children. This is really not just for first-time moms. This is for anyone who's having babies.
And can we go ahead and say this is for anyone needing support in life in any transition? Because really, we're talking about postpartum, but this could just as easily be an illness, or this could just as easily be a death of a loved one.
Or a surgery.
Or a surgery, right? Or a job loss, or a depression, or any time when we as humans just need a little bit of support.
And a big way that people can be supported through the postpartum time, but also through those other transitions, is having a meal tree, or people also call it a meal train. And this is where you have someone, not the person who's having the baby or going through the surgery, but a friend or family member, organize their community to bring them meals. And this can be tremendously helpful. I think we all know that sometimes you just wish somebody else would have cooked dinner for you that night.
Yes. And I think I know for me, when I had both of my children, there was a meal train. And, you know, the food was one part because it was like that physical nourishment. But it was really just a show of love and support. Like, people showing up with this hot meal really was like, we're all in this together, and let me help you alleviate some of your burden. And the people bringing it over are so excited to have a tangible way to help. Sometimes when we need help, people don't know kind of what to do. They see you exhausted. They see you not sleeping. They see you smelly and unshowered and smelling like sour milk and, you know, all unkempt. And they don't really know what's stepping on your toes and what's helpful. And I will go ahead and say, like, a hot meal is always helpful.
It's always helpful. Yeah. And some, I know that some moms and families really like to have that time after they have their baby to really just focus inwards, and they don't want to be social and connect and have people come inside. And especially I'm imagining with the death of a loved one or other life events, the meal tree doesn't need to be a social schedule. It can be if you're wanting that, but it can also just be a meal dropped off on your porch. You wave and run the other direction.
Right. And I've seen people, like, at meal trains that I've dropped food off, some people just have a sign that's like, open for visitors or not open for visitors, you know, or baby napping, or, you know, nothing more than that. Just a little sign on the door that says, come on in, or we're sleeping.
Yeah.
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 And so with your time postpartum, did you find, when you said that you had a difficult time, was it emotionally? Was it physically?
It was physically, because I had jumped back into my life so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that I think what we see depicted maybe in movies and books is really this, you know, this woman, and she goes off and has this baby, and then, oh, here she's back, and, you know, her hair is all cute, and she's got the stroller, and she's walking the baby, and everything's back to normal. And it's like this whole mid time is sort of just glanced over.
Well, yeah, we have this myth of the good mother. Yeah. And the good mother is able to be happy, nurturing, look beautiful, and keep her house together. And so what I, in my classes for moms and in the workbook, I'm really encouraging people to let go of that idea of the good mother and to really focus on how they're doing. I think it's funny. I think that sometimes social media makes that good mother myth even worse, because no one wants to have a picture put on social media of themselves looking bedraggled and overwhelmed and emotional. And so you see people, the pictures that are going out are, you know, these happy, beautiful new moms.
Right, when you'd never know, I just had a baby 16 hours ago.
Yeah,
pictures.
When actually maybe she was just crying, or maybe she was just about to cry an hour later.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges that mothers can have. Of course, the postpartum time is filled with so much love and wonder and beauty, and it can also be really, really hard for a lot of women. I think when I started looking at my own experience and then I started researching, I realized that there's pretty much a crisis in postpartum health, mental health, and I would add physical health. Mm-hmm. I think that moms are having a really hard time. I think we have this idea that with modern medicine, we don't need rest and we don't need these traditional special
That's
care
right.
practices. But in actuality, antibiotics, it's wonderful that we have antibiotics if you get a breast infection or any other kind of infection. But that doesn't overcome our need for bonding with our baby, for sleep and for warmth and for connection with our family and just the quiet.
Yeah. I think, you know, what I see a lot too is when we're in a hospital setting, the grounds for discharge after a birth, right? So, you know, we go as we walk in as one unit, mom and baby inside. We then go through this separation, which in and of itself can be really traumatic at a deep level for a woman. I'm not just talking about the birth process, but actually separating from having the baby inside. And then, you know, the grounds for discharge are basically, are we medically stable? So is the baby vital and all the vitals are good and the baby's breathing on its own and the baby is adequately nursing or given formula? And, you know, it's kind of a algorithm, a checklist. And then is mom stable? Is her blood pressure okay? Is her bleeding stopped? You know, it's really just kind of a, okay, check, check, check. But really that all the other things that go into it besides just the, are we stable and able to survive?
Survival's very good
survival
and important,
is great.
But we need
How
so
about
much
thriving?
More. Yeah.
How about thriving?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that feeling, like I hear from patients often about once they get, once, you know, especially there's a little bit of a difference between if they're at home or if they're in a hospital, but in a hospital birth, once you're discharged, you're sort of like, oh, now what? Like now there's no more nurses to tell me what to do with the baby. Mm-hmm. And now there's not a doctor coming in to make sure everything's okay. And now I'm really on my own. And I think it's that same feeling at a home birth when the midwife leaves after the baby is born. And then, mm-hmm. you know, they're coming back the next day. But there's that period of like, oh, wait, now I need to know what to do. Mm-hmm. But actually, now I'm totally exhausted.
Mm-hmm. So that's part of with the workbook, I really walk people through a postpartum planning process. And my goal is that they come out with what I call a plan for the milk retreat. And a milk retreat, I use that term to replace the traditional specific cultural practices like the cuarentena from Mexico or the Nam Lua in from Vietnam or 30 days in China or the 40 days in Russia. Hmm. So the milk retreat is a set amount of time where the woman receives rest and support and care. And then the other piece of the postpartum plan is the contingency plan, which I call the postpartum net. The net is there to catch you when you're having a hard time. Mm-hmm. So if you, during pregnancy, make your plan and you agree with yourself and your partner that if you're having a hard time with breastfeeding, you're going to call this close friend, this lactation consultant, this La Leche League leader until you get the help you need, it's much more likely that you'll actually make the call when you're having a hard time because the postpartum time is full of, we're just in such a wash of exhaustion, elation, overwhelm. There's so much going on. It's really hard to decide to make that phone call. And with so many postpartum issues, whether it's breastfeeding challenges or mental health issues, physical recovery issues, the sooner you make the phone call and get the help you need, the better.
Yeah. And I think what I often see is it's so hard to, I think women feel like a sense of, oh, this must just be me and something's not right and I'm kind of ashamed. There's some shame involved, you know, especially we all, you know, it's very common knowledge, at least in the medical field, that not all moms bond with their babies instantly. That some moms, it's just this instant connection, and others, it's this very gradual falling in love process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when that doesn't happen instantly, women feel like something is really wrong with them, and they're really ashamed of it, and they're scared of it, and they don't quite know what to do. I think, in a sense, normalizing these things that can happen, you know, anxiety and difficulty bonding and really difficult getting breastfeeding established, all of this is part of normalcy, but we just don't see it portrayed as this is normal.
I think that it's important that it's normalized, and I also think it's important that getting the help for these issues is also normalized. Because sometimes I think online moms are on a mom's group and everybody says, oh yeah, I'm depressed. And then they think, well, that's end of story. There's nothing, that's just what
that's
you
right.
can expect. But really, there's a lot to do to help with any of these challenges.
Right. And there's a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the breastfeeding world, there is so much support.
There really
that when
is.
When you don't have nursing established or you're having difficulty, there is... And free support at
There's
that.
Lots
there is
of free
so
support.
Much. Yeah.
So this brings me to, I really encourage people to think about a postpartum budget. And obviously everybody's family has a different financial setup. But I encourage people to have some money set aside for any extra help that they may need. And then I also encourage, if someone is more financially well off, to really look for filling in those gaps with their community. Because I think that sometimes people don't get the support they need because they think they can't afford it, or don't get the social connection they need because they think they can just pay people to come in and fill those roles.
That's right.
So yeah. I think both are really important.
Yeah, and budgeting for it the same way you budget for a birth or any other big life transition. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. We're talking with Kestrel Gates about postpartum wellness and postpartum planning. I'm Dr. Allie Evans, and this is Light on Health. Yes,
איך שנסתכל על זה ונסתכל כן פעמיים היום זורם זורם כמו אתמול כמו שלשום וזה אותו כחול גדול אותו עוף בשמיים אותו עלה של זית אל מחר נוטה ליפול אז בוא נתפור את הקרע אשליה שבגבולות
Unity Radio. My guest is Kestrel Gates, and we're talking about postpartum planning, which, like I said, we can substitute for any transition in life. I mean, the postpartum time is really just a transition. So any time that we're in transition or need some support, this is kind of, even though your book is specific to postpartum, people hearing it can also think about times in life where they really need to do some planning around when they're going to need some support.
Yeah.
And I love this idea because we talk so much about birth plans, you know, and I always tell my patients, come up with a birth plan and then come up with your kind of no agenda, letting everything go plan that you might need to do in the moment. You know, this having a plan that makes us feel comforted, but at the same time being willing to surrender.
Yeah, I think about it like driving. We figure out where we want to go and we set out. And then we put our seatbelts on and we have our map handy. And so, for instance, like thinking about cesarean recovery, I do think it's really important that people have a sense of what goes into cesarean recovery and have some plans about that as a potential birth outcome, but also what the what extra recovery needs they'll need. And I think that sometimes there's a tendency to want to avoid that which we don't want to happen.
Sure. We don't want to manifest it.
We don't want to manifest it.
Yeah.
And yet, I think, like, when we put a seatbelt on, we're not manifesting or bringing about a car accident. We're just being prepared.
Right.
If we have to put on our brakes.
And taking that one extra measure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you figure out what you want, and that's the milk retreat, and put all the pieces in place and head in that direction.
So you mentioned, and I'm really curious about this, you mentioned about some of the other cultures and what they do for milk retreat, or they might not call it that, but what typically is the time period and what does it look like? What's the span?
What I've been finding, and I'm not an expert in traditions from around the world, but what I'm finding is that 30 days or 40 days is the norm, and that the milk retreat around the world, the traditional practices happen to a woman. These, in traditional settings, women don't have to make a plan. Everybody in their community knows what women need after they give birth.
Because it's embedded in the culture.
It's embedded in the culture.
Yeah.
And so her older children are taken care of. She's cooked for. Someone else cleans her house. House cleaning is a huge source of stress in marriages. So having, even if someone just planned for who's going to clean their house, I think that would be a good place to start with. Just a couple times. And then they also have, there's lots of different special ways of caring for mothers, which most of which have to do with warmth. And this is something that in our modern American culture, we have completely lost sight of. But I've read that it's the most cross-cultural postpartum practice is warmth, even over rest. And there's a lot of different ways of keeping a mom warm after she gives birth, staying out of the wind and staying in a warm room. It's when I talk to moms about how to think about it, it's kind of like if you have a really stressful day at work, you don't go home and take a cold shower usually. You want to take a hot bath.
Right.
Or if you think you're feeling your immune system's kind of taxed and you're feeling like you might be coming down with a cold or a flu, you don't go out in the rain and the wind.
Right.
You want to get bundled up. So even though it's hard for, I'd say, the Western mind to get behind the idea of not having iced water or using ice in other ways and it seems, I think it almost seems backwards to the right. Western mind.
Right.
But when you think about it in the sense of when you're getting sick or when you've been stressed out, which is what after giving birth, your whole system is stressed, obviously, and your immune
That's
system,
right.
you're vulnerable. So it makes sense when you think about it in those
It
ways.
Does. And then when you saying this was making me think about how a newborn can't regulate their body temperature very well.
Mm-hmm.
So right in that same period, right at about, you know, the month or so, the baby's very able to regulate their own temperature. But if you provide warmth,
mm-hmm.
you can then have skin to skin contact between the mom and baby. You don't need layers of clothing and blankets in between,
mm-hmm.
which helps nursing establish,
mm-hmm.
which helps babies, you know, which helps the baby and so on and so forth. And then the baby having that skin to skin contact also helps regulate their respiratory system
mm-hmm.
and their neurological system. So it makes sense, even me and my doctor medical mind,
mm-hmm.
this really makes sense, even from a physiological standpoint. It makes
Absolutely.
That culture make
yeah.
sense.
Yeah. And I really, in my workbook, I really focus completely on the mother. I don't talk about parenting practices. And yet I really believe that by supporting the mother, giving her resources, if she is confused or lost, she can contact somebody and ask. But giving her that time of rest that she will naturally and instinctually come across the parenting practices that make sense to her that really do support the baby's wellness.
Yeah.
I think it can be really hard to just tell moms, well, you're supposed to do this. Your baby needs this.
Right.
That kind of baby focus can be very shaming.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, You can't expect a mom to just lay in bed and breastfeed all month if she doesn't have the support of her community. So it's not just her individual choice.
That's right.
And that's something that, like, the success of breastfeeding is not just doesn't just lay on that mother. It's her partner. It's her family around her. It's the culture around her.
Yeah.
So but, yeah.
And I think, you know, after birth, especially if you're a more extroverted person. After birth, you know, right after birth, you really can't get up and go and get the social interactions that you need to recharge as an extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be extremely isolating. You know,
mm-hmm.
that idea of you ought to lay in bed and nurse, you ought to do this. If
mm-hmm.
it's not what feels like recharging to you, that can be really isolating for
mm-hmm.
a woman.
So in my workbook, I really stress that there's no one right way
mm-hmm.
to go about the postpartum time. It really is very personal. And yeah, I think that it's personal. It's specific to the woman. It's specific to her family, her culture, her financial situation, her friend, her social structure.
Yeah.
And it's really important to keep coming back to that idea that, no, I get to make the choices about my postpartum time that make sense to me and not to just tell moms that there's a certain way to do it.
Right. And I love this idea of a little bit of planning ahead because I think one of the things that is really, I think, an area that needs a lot more emphasis is mental health postpartum. You know, there's a really large, you share the statistic of 1 in 5 women
have a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. And that's
right.
kind of an umbrella term for depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, psychosis, all the mental health experiences kind of fit into that, except for PTSD, which is a separate postpartum
right.
PTSD is a separate diagnosis.
Right. But if you think about that, that means even in Astoria on a given day, there's at least one woman leaving the birthing center who's going to have a perinatal mood disorder. But we don't know. A lot of us don't even know that that's a possibility. And we think, why do I feel so anxious? Or why am I afraid someone's going to come kidnap my baby? Or why am I having, you know, these terrible thoughts that something horrible is going to happen, or why am I not bonding, or why? I mean, they're very real conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think knowing that that exists and knowing that it's not just you and that there's resources out there for it, because when there's a plan and when you know some of the things to look out for.
And it's helpful to have
yeah.
your partner, if you have a partner, to have
yeah.
your partner on board and know these things too. And with the workbook, I do give specific information. I have a lot of space and questions, but I also come back to some just really nuts and bolts specific information about mental health and other challenges that can come up so that you know, but also so that your partner can be on board and understand and knowing who to call.
Right.
Is really important. Postpartum International is a really great website to get more information about postpartum mental health.
That's great. And just for the moms out there listening, if you don't feel right after birth and you feel like something just doesn't feel right and you feel anxious or you feel really down, this is part of, I mean, dare I say, a normal continuum. You know, this is mm-hmm. a part of a very normal spectrum, and there is support, and it will pass, and get the support you need.
Get the support.
It's not
you
just
need.
You.
Yeah.
And it's not just something to, you know, feel ashamed about and try to make go away.
Yeah.
And so your book is really one of the first books out there that's a planning. I haven't seen anything like this that's really like a how do you write your own script in your own movie?
Yeah, there's some really wonderful books about the postpartum out there, but there isn't a workbook like this that empowers people to come up with their own plan.
Yeah.
And I also cover topics that I'm not seeing in some of the other books. Like I talk about time in the NICU mm-hmm. and, you know, things like that. I think it's 1 in 10 babies spends time in the NICU. So that's quite a few.
It is.
Families that go through having a baby in the NICU. But also even if the, you know, all the readers don't experience that, then they have more of an understanding of what their friends are going through and can be more supportive when their friends have babies in the NICU or are recovering from cesarean, having these challenges.
Right. NICU
is the neonatal intensive care unit.
Yeah.
So that's especially when there's multiples or babies are premature or if there's a specific health condition, babies are put there, hooked up to machines and they're in incubators. And, you know, as moms, we are hardwired to have our babies right on us. And so this can be really, really challenging, even if you know they're getting exactly the right support that they need. It can be really emotionally challenging.
Well, and I see even to the extent of even at a home birth, let's say, when a mom has the baby and then really needs to rest, even being separated from her baby then, even if it can be the father saying, mm-hmm. I'll go take the baby in the other room, can be extremely traumatic for a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing that we, you know, there's this separation piece happening where you've been mm-hmm. one and now you're two,
mm-hmm.
you know. And what you said about PTSD or postpartum or, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, especially mm-hmm. around postpartum, is so interesting because birth really can be tremendously traumatic, even if it isn't overtly traumatic.
It can be emotionally traumatic, yeah. and it can also be physically traumatic. So even a birth where you feel the mom comes out of it feeling good, oh, I'm glad we're both alive, it all went well. If it was physically traumatic, like in a cesarean, the body registers trauma, and so there can be a post-traumatic stress response. And from my understanding, I'm not a mental health worker, of course, but from my understanding, the way that trauma works is it's accumulative and it's not specific. So if she had a car accident a couple years prior and didn't release the post-traumatic stress from that incident, and then she has some kind of trauma in her birth, maybe it's breastfeeding issues afterwards, any kind of challenge around caring for her baby or birthing her baby, the stress from that car accident could come right back and kind of build up on mm-hmm. The stress that she's having. And also, if you imagine, many of us carry post-traumatic stress. Maybe we aren't diagnosed with PTSD, but we're carrying that. And we have coping mechanisms. And for many of us, that's working too much, or we like to have a couple drinks in the evening, or, you know, we have various ways of dealing with it. Well, postpartum moms usually aren't able to use the coping mechanisms that they're used to.
Yeah. That's correct. So for people who are interested in buying your book, where do they get it?
So they can go, they can order it on my website, which is kestrelgates.com, and or buildyournestworkbook.com. And soon when the children's resale store that was ODB's reopens, it'll be A Lot of Us Children's Resale at 1054 Exchange Street, which is right next to the library, they'll carry it as well.
Great.
And then on December 3rd, my family is hosting the second annual Winter Bazaar, and we'll have some available there too.
Great. And if people want to get more information from you, your website?
Is kestrelgates.com.
K-E-S-T-R-E-L.
Yep.
G-A-T-E-S.
Yes.
.com.
Yep.
Great. Well, Kestrel, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And Thank you to my generous engineer, Kate Brister. You've been listening to Light on Health. It's my hope that we've empowered and enlightened you to take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health. Join me on our next show on December 27th. Zoem, zoem, כמו אתמול, כמו שלשום, וזה אותו.